It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple action. It's the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we've got the trio, steps 5, 6, and 7. Please welcome our panel. We've got Scott and Ryan. Oh yeah, and I did not, y'all can fight for whoever goes first, or Ryan can choose, doesn't matter, but I'm gonna read, start off with the first reading. I'm gonna read the first paragraph. It's actually two. It's gonna be on page 72. Step 5 is admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And 7 is humbly asked him to remove our shortcoming. And on page 72, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. Right? Which one of y'all is going first?
Scott. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
And where to begin? I thought at first, you know, I didn't come to AA because I thought it was a great idea or something I was really looking forward to. You know, I was one of those who was invited to attend by the court system. And so I came and I looked at the steps on the wall, and I really thought that step 4 was the one I was the least interested in. That didn't seem fearless searching moral inventory. I wanted no part of that. And it wasn't until I looked at step 5 where I realized that not only was it there in inventory, but I had to tell somebody about it. Then that's the one I really didn't like at all. So much so that I avoided AA. I'm just going to skip the whole and actually managed to stay sober for a while without it. The amusing thing to me is, in retrospect, the God of my understanding saw to it that I was still kind of practicing the steps, even though I didn't know it. And the clearest example I can think of related to this is, you know, I got involved with this outdoor club because I knew I couldn't just quit drinking. I had to fill the hole with something. So I was hanging out with these people who kind of took me in like family. It was wonderful. But at the time, I drank my license away, and I knew they're going to ask, they go, how come you don't drive, or how come you don't have a car? And I knew it was coming up. And look, it took like a year probably or more with this just in the back of my head. They're going to ask. I know it, but I didn't want to tell them because it just seemed too embarrassing. And sure enough, at some point they said, hey, how come you don't drive or how come you don't have a license? And I just said, and so I felt this remarkable anxiety and nervousness. And then I said, you know, honesty probably works. So I said, I got a couple DUIs when I was in college. And he said, ah, shame on you. And went right on to the next part of the conversation. Damn. This has been rattling around in my head for probably a year, maybe more. I know this is coming, and it ended in like 10 seconds. And so I laugh at that today because this thing that kept me away from AA, the God of my understanding kind of directed me to it to kind of show me, hey, you don't have to get involved in AA if you want, don't want to, but here's the value of the steps, and I'm going to bring it to you even outside this forum. So I don't recommend that to everyone. I think it is a lot easier if you pick up a white chip and do things traditionally, even though I'd say, I guess, finally for this, where it talks about letting everything out, you know, sharing everything. I shared most of the dirty stuff, and it was the relief that I thought it would be, and it did enable me to go on in sobriety. But it wasn't until like 2 months ago, you know, I quit drinking in 1997. 2 months ago, I'm doing steps with the sponsee, and he's sharing his inventory, and he says this one thing. That's the one thing that I did, and I wasn't going to tell anybody, and had not until that point, 27 years into sobriety, where again, the God of my understanding, I think, is at work and directs me to a sponsee who had done the very thing that I thought I was never going to share with anybody. He shares it with me, which then leads me to say, you know what, I haven't told anybody else. And so it just continues revealing the layers of the onion kind of thing for me. Yet it's still an effort. I wish I could say it's easy, but it is. I'm glad to be here.
I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Ryan.
Yeah, I'm like Scott. This was definitely one of the steps that I was terror, absolute terror is actually the words that come to mind. I remember my thoughts about this was I would rather rip my skin off, you know, because it was terrifying. Most of my life, I'm a person, I just don't talk about things. If there's something going on, I am like a master at giving you as little information as possible to get you off my back. Thank you very much. And, certainly I never would have had any part of this if I didn't have to, cause the reality was, is I like to drink. I'm not going to lie for a long time. I call it liquid freedom. But I'm an alcoholic. It got a little bit messy. And I did what I could to quit. All kinds of lovely things, therapists, post-it notes, walks around the block, mostly quitting tomorrow. That one was never any good. And I wound up in AA. I don't know if for you new folks, if you've been here before, I came to AA and I went to a lot of meetings like they told me to, and I got what I called a magical sponsor. And for some reason, I kept getting drunk, you know. And the reality that I was facing was that it was awful drunk and it was awful sober. And I had absolutely no idea what to do about any of that. And I will say the one thing I hadn't tried to get sober was a spiritual approach, which is probably why AA kind of had my attention. And somebody told me about clear-cut directions on how to recover. And this was part of it. And I don't really have a bottom story. What I have is waking up to the same day every day and realizing that it wasn't going to change. And that was actually more horrifying than a bottom, if you ask. So I did. I wrote the inventory. If you haven't done one of those, you look at resentment, you look at fear, you get to talk about sex conduct. That's always fun. And you get it on paper and show up in front of another human being. I'm not really sure where I was going with this, but yeah, I tried to avoid the humbling experience. Absolutely, that didn't go too well. Discover the obstacles of my past. All this stuff, it sounds really nice now that I'm rereading it. What are we doing with this fifth step? Trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our creator and to discover the obstacles in our path. It's funny, it kind of stands out to me now, but back then it didn't. It was just like, make it stop, let's try this. But apparently that's the purpose of this thing. You know, I was told that if you're powerless over alcohol, you better find a power. And this was part of that process. So I think that's all I got to say about that.
Thank you both. All right. The next reading is going to be on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He's very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by things he does on his spree. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more...
Scott, uncle, this paragraph or two kind of describes at least the last year or two of my drinking, long before I ever thought about doing an inventory, long before I ever thought about talking to another human being about that or anything about a higher power. I did have pretty much constant fear and tension, trembling to think of someone who might have observed him, because I didn't remember what I did. I didn't understand the difference between blacking out and passing out. I thought, I'm all right, I'm not past time. And it didn't occur to me that I was blacking out. You know, that's where I was still up and functioning and appeared coherent to everybody else, but I couldn't tell you a thing that happened. Conversations that I'd had. Another thing I laugh at now, I would have been really dangerous with a cell phone and the ability to text when I drank. So I'm very thankful that I quit before that whole thing came about. I used to wait until the end of the month and I'd get a phone statement and I look through the calls, the long distance calls each, you know, and go, oh man, that's why that conversation was so awkward. It happened at 1:45 and they were asleep. They didn't want to talk to me about whatever I was drunk and rambling about. So I used to have fun stuff to do like that, like wait till the end of the month to get the bill to find out exactly who I called and made an idiot out of, rather than the joy of just looking at the list on my phone the next morning. But that really is that constant fear and tension. That's so much of what goes away when I'm honest with myself, when I'm honest with God, when I'm honest with another human being. And then that's when I really start to be able to experience this idea of, you know, one day at a time. I thought it was just for people who were, you know, that's all they could do. They could make it through one day without drinking and that was it. And that's true. But this to me, this part of the 12-step process is kind of where the one day at a time really starts happening. And I realized that I can live in the moment today. After I've gotten all this stuff out of my past, I mean, true, at this point, I haven't made amends or any of that yet. So I was still pretty worried about that. But it was the beginning to be able to live just in the moment. To be able to go out to dinner with people and talk about just whatever comes up without worrying, like, oh man, do you remember what happened? You know, to get rid of all of that stuff was a remarkable freedom. And it's one of the gifts to me today in long-term sobriety. You know, I still do dumb stuff, but I remember a lot more, pretty much all of it. And it doesn't carry on. It doesn't, you know, linger into the next day like it used to when I was drinking. So the under constant fear and tension has gone away, which doesn't mean that fear and tension don't come. You know, I thought maybe that meant they go away forever, and that's not been the case for me. They do come up, but through the steps to this point, and then, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and all the rest, then I learned how to minimize that and not dwell in it. That was miserable, or wherever it was we read. You know, he pushes these memories far inside himself. Yeah, that was me in drinking. I drank to be happy at first. And then as one DUI and another DUI, and then another one, and you know, having to, you know, as these things kept adding up, then I just drank to keep myself from feeling as bad as I did before and just continued to descend. So I'm very thankful not to have to do that anymore today. Thanks.
All right. So double life. So I guess basically I've got this really weird thing. I've been messed up my whole life as far back as I can remember. I was suicidal by the time I was 12. I think that during my teenager's years, I kind of got off on being like the angsty gal, rebel, outcast. I barely spoke to anybody. I think I had like 3 friends in my high school and I was perfectly fine with that. But as I got a little bit older, there's like this entry into real life that you're supposed to be able to do. And I was not quite able to do that. I think I dropped out of college about 3 times and everyone else is graduating with degrees and things like that, you know, and I'm at home like trying to sell Kirby vacuum cleaners. That lasted a week. But you know, so I was trying to portray this image, and I know I did kind of hit the a little bit the jackpot. I was able to marry a really nice guy. He was an officer in the Army, and I was the family readiness group leader. It was awesome. And so we're going around to all these nice military events where you're supposed to be like normal and functioning and helpful to people. And I'm an absolute hot mess. You know, I'm getting drunk and the commander's wife is having to come do a 2 a.m. call to my house, take me to the hospital because they're worried about me. You know, I'm showing up at functions where absolutely nobody is drinking drunk and people are starting to notice. You know, I'm having trouble at jobs, and all I want to be able to do is stand in front of people and be like, look, I'm amazing. And it was just not working at all. And so there really was this kind of double life, the way that I wanted to appear and the way that I actually was. And as time slipped by, the ability to keep that under wraps was not going so hot. And this idea of like constant fear and tension, I mean, it sounds silly, but I have memories of waking up in the morning, laying in bed, huddled in a ball, just like rocking and saying it's all going to be okay. Because there was just this sense like today's the day it all falls apart. I don't know what's going to happen or who's going to find out, but something's going to. And that definitely was not a good way to live, and certainly more drinking, because then it's not really fun anymore. Then it's just, I don't want to feel anything anymore. How do I make it turn it off? And what was really interesting to me, though, and I know this is kind of off the subject of drinking, is discovering that I could be like that sober, you know. I don't know. I wanted to be the goody-goody two-shoes, Miss AA, look at my amazing steps, how many people that I'm helping. I'll show you the right way to do it. And I'm not going to lie, totally judging the crap out of people who didn't do it as good as me. And finding myself walking around in AA, making mistakes and trying to put on the show and not wanting to tell anybody about that. And all these lies and stuff. And that right back then there, you got constant fear and tension because who's going to find out what, you know? And yeah, that's fun too. And apparently we've got a solution for that also. That's all I got on those paragraphs.
All right. The next reading is going to be on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
Sounds good. I just want to listen to more of that. And when I read this, you know, especially if I read this by myself, then I tend to kind of rewrite it a little bit. You know, we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. You know, I rewrite, say, you know, I will always have this. This is going to be great. Everything is going to be awesome. And in many ways it is, certainly in the first few minutes or hours or days or however, you know, after I've shared all these awful things with someone else and I realize, man, I'm at least 10 or 20 pounds lighter, then it does feel better. But then I tend to think it should just always feel good, which is kind of what got me in trouble to begin with, because that's why I drank. When I didn't feel good, then a few drinks or 6 or 12 or more could make me feel better. And so it turns out I have this hang up about feeling good that I will still pursue even in sobriety. It says we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Now, where I get off saying, well, I will always be at perfect peace and ease, that's part of my spiritual issue. I always want it better. If I have it good, I want it better. If I have more, I want more than that. And what it really talks about, I think to me, what it really means is that we can be alone in perfect peace and ease. It means I have that ability, but it requires something of me. And if I just accept that I have that ability, that's good enough, because I used to hate being alone. That's another reason I drank. I didn't like me. I didn't like my thoughts. But now I don't have to drink to be alone, but I'm not always at perfect peace and ease. So what do I do then? It says we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. For a long time, I thought that meant I had to be in church, or I had to be praying on top of some mountaintop somewhere, or meeting with a guru or something. I thought there was a very definite idea of what that looked like. And today I think a meeting is enough. I believe now spirituality, to me, the core of that now is service. It doesn't mean that I don't go to church. I do, although you don't have to. And I do have friends who do get together and talk about spiritual things, but more focused sometimes than AA. But the idea of spirituality today is thinking of other people and doing things, even if it's just sending a text or calling, saying, how are you doing? The source of my misery was mostly in my head. And I always thought that I'll be nice to people. I don't mind being nice to people, but I'll help you out after I get what I need. And it was the process of the 12 steps that told me I had that in exactly the opposite order. I mean, I do need to take care of myself, but when I can focus on what I can do for other people around me, whether it's attending a meeting and sharing experience, strength, and hope, or whether it's going to rehabs and hospitals and sharing my story there, that to me is spiritual, every bit as much, perhaps more so, than getting up at Sunday morning and going to sing a hymn somewhere. So that to me becomes more important as I go along. It's not about spiritual beliefs. It's, am I having a spiritual experience? And if I'm not, what can I do to bring that about? Used to be, I just blame God. God didn't do enough for me. And he and I still talk. There's still a lot of things he does that I question or don't like. But I have the gift of a better understanding and perspective today than I ever had before. And so I have a chance of walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I don't feel like that every morning. I won't feel that like that in the morning when the alarm goes off. But at some point in the day, tomorrow, it will occur. And if it's not as long as I want, then I have tools and ways to make that experience greater today than I didn't. So, I like this reading, but I need to be careful that I read what it says and not what I want.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, I'm going to jump out of the readings if y'all don't mind, because there's something that caught my eye right on the page before. And it says, we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. And I don't know, I was sitting here thinking about how it talks about we're trying to get like a new relationship with our creator. We begin to feel with the nearness of our creator. And I'm not going to lie, I'm not even sure if I care about that. I want to live like happily. I want to walk around and not have that freaking terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. Call it selfish if you want. I'm not doing this because I'm a goody two shoes, you know? That's what I'm all about. And it says, I must do this if I want to. All right, fun. Let's do this. And the other thing I want to say, you know, because I guess, I don't know, I did. I wrote the inventory and I certainly did a fifth step. And I did pretty much all of my fifth steps with sponsors. But I do want to say that it's not essential to do it with a sponsor. The instructions right here in the big book says that we can do these steps with anyone, you know? So I always like to keep in mind, if there's something that somebody's not comfortable talking about with me or somebody else, just freaking find somebody, please, pretty please, with sugar on top. Don't feel that pressure on yourself. The only rule for that is you don't want to disclose something to someone if it's going to harm them. You know, there's stuff that my mom doesn't need to know. There's stuff that my friends don't need to know, you know, anyhow, so I have my freaking inventory and this waste no time. I don't think I explained to anybody what I was going to do. They were sponsors. They kind of knew about it. But I did pocket the pride. You know, there's things that it talks about where we begin to feel that we have a spiritual experience and all of this. I don't know if I got that the first time I wrote inventory. it was kind of a weird thing. I'm totally glad that I did that first inventory and fifth step. It was perfect for what it needed to be when it was. But I did kind of walk away from that feeling like I had a bunch of crap still left in my closet and like, what the heck is going on here? And so I ended up talking to somebody else probably 6 or 7 months later. And it was kind of funny. I don't know if I intentionally withheld anything on that inventory, but there was some things like I just couldn't figure out where they fit into like the categories, mostly because it was just screwed up stuff in my head that was really bothering me. And I'm like, where does this go? And so I ended up talking to somebody and about that. And that's when I started to feel, they say the nearness of our creator, man. I know it sounds cheesy, but that's what it was. I remember driving home, man, and I just felt connected to for the first time sitting in my car all by myself. And that's a big deal to me because I'm a person who is uncomfortable around people just about 100% of the time, you know. Scott talks about those things flaring up. I'm not going to lie, I still get pretty freaking uncomfortable walking to a meeting sometimes. But to freaking feel that relief, it's like this space in my gut just kind of opens up and I can like actually breathe and relax a little bit, which I think is pretty sweet. Yeah, I think that's all I got on that.
Thank you both. All right, this reading is also on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. For we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
I'm going to save 6 until later.
I know, it feels weird.
All right, then. Let's see. So I guess makes me, I think of meditation, being quiet for an hour. And I know I didn't do after. I know my sponsor told me go home, find a quiet place. I'm not sure if he said an hour. I'll blame him because it's easier than taking responsibility for it myself. I'm sure it wasn't an hour. It was in the interest of honesty, I don't meditate for an hour today. I mean, I love to say, oh yeah, I do, but I'm lucky if I get, I'm not sure I've ever done half an hour. So this seems like a really long time the more I think about it, but I get the point. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet, carefully reviewing what we have done, thanking God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. I took that more as a direction, I guess, than as an explanation of what really happened to me, because I didn't feel necessarily that I knew God a whole lot better. Although I think obviously that comes over time. But rereading the first 5 proposals, have we omitted anything? As I shared earlier, I knew I left a few things out, but I apparently got enough of them. You know, and I wouldn't advise it to anybody else either to hold on to stuff. But if we omitted anything, are we building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last? Is our work solid so far? You know, I was also told by a sponsor just to do, you know, one step at a time, but I like to look ahead. And I guess that carries with me now because I'm looking at this next paragraph. It's like, man, I'm prepared to talk about step 6. I've talked all I know about step 5. And so briefly, you can read it next. All right, I won't go into that. I'd say at this point, I think of that today in long-term sobriety. I think, you know, if there's an issue I have going on, it can never hurt to back up a bit. One of the guys in my home group is real militant about, you know, everything being a step 1. And I think that kind of oversimplifies things, but I get his point. Because when I'm mad about something that happened at work, when I'm mad about, you know, something a friend did or whatever, or you know, family members that are acting in ways that I think are wrong, yeah, it reminds me every day. I get reminders that I don't have the power that I think I do. So where it talks about, you know, how we're creating this foundation, step 1, 2, and 3, you know, turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him, acknowledging that I'm not the highest power in the room. I need to keep all of that in mind just because I've done step 1 or I've done step 2 or 3. You know, it's an ongoing process, and I may at any point need to go back to any of them, because I can sit up here and look very confident, and I can sound very eloquent and say a few coherent things. And then by the time I get home, be entirely spun up in my head about something that I'm convinced is going to happen at work, whether it does or doesn't. Or I'll rewrite, oh man, I could have said this better, that better. So I always need to look at this paragraph and consider, where can I back up instead of racing forward? Where can I back up and make sure that I'm prepared through steps 1, 2, or 3, or perhaps the inventory is, do I need to reflect more? That's never a bad idea, although I'm not quite there for meditating.
Thanks.
Ryan, alcoholic again. Yeah, so I don't know, call me a cheese ball, but I freaking took it literal. Like, I was a hot mess, and we are not going to skip stuff. We're not going to mess with it. Please just make it stop. I will do everything, because really my plan B was suicide. So I did. I sat at home for an hour. Nothing particularly significant about that time pops up in my head. I don't know if I would call it meditating, but I was certainly sitting there quietly. And it's kind of interesting where it talks about, you know, did we miss anything? I think it says that, blah, 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 blah. And there was one thing that popped in my head. I was like, oh crap, there was that time I backed into a car and I just drove away. You know, maybe I should tell somebody about that tomorrow. We'll just add that one to the list. And yeah, that was my hour. I don't have anything else inspiring to say about that. Thank you.
Next reading is going to be on page 76. We can answer to our satisfaction. We then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we had admitted are objection? Can he now take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We will not let go. We will ask God to help us be with.
All right. Now we can talk about that, which I say because I loved step 6, because I thought I didn't have to do anything. And, you know, but admit that I have character defects, let God remove them. That's easy enough, right? Let go, let God sit back and just see what happens. And I probably did take it almost that jokingly. But, there was a speaker here not too long ago who talked about 6 and 7 and the drop the rock thing. He's, you don't need to drop the rock. It's all in the book. It really is that simple. And I get that. I would agree with his point. But as a chronic overthinker, even in active recovery, as much as I was in active alcoholism, I did appreciate drop the rock, because it explained a lot more to me in ways that the big book, obviously the big book was not wrong, but I wanted more. Tell me more. It can't be this easy. And so that was a pretty useful resource for me, because I think if I want to grow in long-term sobriety, step six and seven is a great place to look. And I never thought about that, because I just thought I had to let go and let God. And while I do, it turns out there's some things that I have to do along the way. One of the things in the book that caught my attention the most was when it said, I can't ask God to remove a defect of character that I'm still actively practicing. And that hit me, because I know it's easy for me to get angry about things, even, you know, it's been a long time since I was last drunk, but I'm still keenly sensitive to something you might say that I take the wrong way, or something you might do, or if people at work don't respect me enough, whatever it is, I like to get angry about. And so I would ask, you know, God, just take this away. And as soon as I said that, I'd go right back to thinking about it. And it reminded me of the part either in the big book or the 12 and 12 that talks about, you know, we tried this prayer thing on hangover mornings. We prayed not to get drunk today and by noon be boiled as an owl. And it's like, that was me. I didn't realize there are things I have to do. Like, if I want a drink, I have to call somebody. I can't just pick up the drink and say, God didn't do it. And the same thing with the character defects. You know, I've got to acknowledge when I'm feeling the things that I don't want to be feeling, and you know, that gift of a pause and all of that. And it's true. I don't remove my own character defects. That's another thing that I thought Drop the Rock was helpful with, because I want to do it. I'll take care of this thing, which I can't do, but there's some effort I have to put into that. And exactly what that is, I don't have an answer, but I have to acknowledge that I have to be more conscious of it than just let go and let God, which is not what the big book said, but that's what I read. I wanted to make it really, really easy. And so I've found in long-term sobriety, if I'm not having the contentedness that I want, which I find on a regular, then this is the place I need, one of the places that I can look to try and make that.
Yeah, so step 6, man, I remember when I wrote inventory, I kind of thought it was everybody else. I thought it was, you know, my dad left when I was 2. I thought it was the screwed up people at work, or the bullies in high school, society, the whole world, let's be real. I thought it was all of those things. And when I wrote inventory for the first time in my life, I could see that that was not the case. I could see where my own dishonesty and selfishness and manipulation and all the things that I did had basically wrecked my own life. And so when I got to step six, my thought was, why on earth would anybody want to hold on to any of that? Yes, absolutely. Please take that, you know? And I did. I went about my life from that business. And a couple of years later, I got a really rude awakening about being unwilling to take care of some character defects. I don't know how much I should say about. Basically, I got involved in a sexual relationship where I was being perhaps none too smart, and I'm starting to see all these things crop up on me. I can see where I'm not lying, but I'm not being honest. I can see where I'm playing the little manipulation games, and I'm writing inventory because when I'm screwing up, I don't know what else to do but to fall back into the steps. So I'm doing these things, and I get to the end of that inventory, and I talk to somebody about it, and I realize one thing with absolute stark reality. I have absolutely no desire to change whatsoever. I want what I want, you know? And that was a terrible reality to be in, because on one hand, it was super exciting. On the other hand, it was super painful. And I'm not sure if I agree with the fact that you can't ask God to remove a defect that you don't want removed. Because all I knew was that I was latching on to that prayer. You know, what was it? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Yeah, I so did not want to change. I put that prayer off for months because I knew if I said it, something might change, and I just didn't want to. So I did. I faltingly every now and again said that prayer. And I want to tell you that I said that prayer and I woke up the next day and I was a magical person, new person. And that's absolutely not what happened. What did start to happen is I found myself being honest in scenarios where I would normally keep my mouth shut. You know, I found myself maybe not playing the games when before I might start to play the game. And that was a change that was produced over time. And that prayer, God help me be willing, man, I use that all the time these days, because a lot of times I'm just not, you know, I don't want to. I just want what I want. I don't want the work. I don't want to the uncomfortableness of having to do the right thing. I don't want to. I want to go play and have an adventure. I don't want to show up and do what I need to do, take care of my responsibilities. And so that stuff has become much more profound to me. And what it really did to be, because to be honest with you, some of this stuff, man, I came to AA and I really wanted to change and I really wanted to live different. And to start to screw up was really kind of shocking and frustrating to me. Like, what the heck is going on here? You know, why is it that even now when I'm trying to change my life, I am screwing it up? You know, how on earth did this happen? What was really also weird was that, like, I found out like new areas that I was screwed up, like I didn't even know before. You know, it was like some of the fears went away and I was like, ooh, new person coming out to play. And it's like, what's this hot mess? And so that was the reality I live in. But it really got started to hit home about that idea of that the concept they bring to us in step one, like Scott was, man, I got a problem that I can't fix, you know, because a lot of times I want to change and I don't know how, you know, and I get stuck with that reality again, A, that we were alcoholic and good not manage our own lives, but B, probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Oh, crap. What do I do with that? You know, in some of those instances, it's say a half-ass, you know, God help me be willing prayer, and then hope for the best and try to show up and do better the next day. You know, that's what that looks like. So yeah, that's what I got to say about that.
Thank you both. All right. The final reading for tonight is also on page 77. When ready, we say something like this: my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my you and my fellow. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven.
Oh, yeah. Said earlier, it's been a while since I was last drunk or even wanted to be, but there are parts of this I don't like at all. Like, I'm okay asking God to take some character defects away. And mainly because some of them are easy. It's easier for me to be honest. So asking to have that taken taken away this lying idea. That's not really an issue. But every single defective character, no. I like some of my defects of character. So that's a challenge. So I look at grant me strength. So as I go out from here to do your bidding, that sounds like people talk about, trying to find God's will and all that kind of thing. It's right here in the book, pretty much. It doesn't require a big search, because that tells me do his bidding. Well, what is that? It could be, if I finish the steps, it could be step 12, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, or to practice these principles in all my affairs. I was going somewhere with that. I don't remember. But so yeah, I need to go back to this on a regular basis. That of all the sayings that I used to hate about AA, the steps are in order for a reason and you never graduate and yada, yada. But I really do, to me, it's not about not drinking. It said something earlier in what we read tonight about it, the drink problem will be removed or be taken away. And I have to be humble enough to admit that it could come back. And if I don't continue to maintain a spiritual condition on a daily basis, then odds are good that compulsion will return. But when I do, then that desire to drink is pretty much gone. The thought comes back periodically, but the desire and the compulsion, that's gone. But so I see today, why am I here tonight? It's not because I'm afraid I'm going to go home and drink tonight if I don't. I'm pretty certain that I'm going to get up tomorrow morning sober, but it's entirely possible I'm going to get up tomorrow and be a complete ass if I haven't had some kind of reinforcement the day before. And if I don't indulge in some, the spiritual condition could, is more than just going to meetings, but that's important to me today in a way that I never thought that it would be, because I always thought it was just about people who needed to quit drinking and couldn't do it by themselves. Today, I look at it as kind of a refinement process. I'm okay with who I am now, which was surely not the case when I drank, but I can do better, or with the God of my understanding, I can do better, because on my own, I can tend to. So that's the way I see, this today. Even though it says we have then completed step 7, I'd love to just chuck it. Done. Let's go. But I do need to kind of keep working on that. And because I confess, when I got the text that, hey, glad you're coming tomorrow night, I hadn't forgotten about coming, but I almost asked David, can I just zoom in on this? That'd be all right. I mean, go out and get wet. It's rainy, a little floody going on. I don't want to do all that. I never said that when I was drinking. I'd go out in any weather to get more beer. But in sobriety, I think sometimes if I'm not careful, this could affect my Netflix viewing. This could get in the way of my thinking about me. And so I guess that ramble is just to say that, I do need this on a regular basis, because I would like to be better than I am today. And in spite of the fact that I may speak confidently and all together, no, I really don't. By the time, I say it a lot, but I mean it. By the time I get to my car, I'd be off on some totally different direction. And I need some kind of anchor and some kind of connection and community to keep going in a meaningful way. Glad to be here.
Thanks. All righty. The first thing that ever stood out about this prayer to me was the idea of God having all of me good and bad. That is kind of a strange reality for me to look at. Because when I think about like a relationship with God, I think about be good, and like earn your relationship with God by being good. And I go out into the world and I try to be good and I'm just not that good. And, so it was a strange prospect and honestly, oddly comforting that's not what it was about. All of me, good and bad. Here's the hot mess and it's okay, Ryan. It doesn't mean you're a failure. Doesn't mean this isn't going to work for you. You're not going to get kicked out of AA. None of that stuff. The other thing is talking about the defects of character. It's the defects of character that stand in the way of my usefulness to my creator and my fellows, not necessarily the ones that I want to get rid of, which is a little bit irritating. But that's the reality. It was kind of drilled in my head. I don't know. Does anybody care if I talk about the third step? How much time do we have? Been making me think about the third step, and I'm thinking about it. So why not? Jeez Louise. All right, whatever. We're going to read it. It says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And there was a couple of things about this prayer that always kind of struck me as weird. Is one, we're going to AA. And so why does it not say relieve me of the bondage of alcohol? You know, it talks about relieve me of the bondage of self. But I've come to appreciate that over the years, because the biggest problem I have is that voice in my head that won't leave me alone. And that's the bondage of self, as far as I'm concerned. And so what I want is relief from that. And in order to do that, it's an offering. Somebody told me it was an exchange, a trade. And later on, I discovered it wasn't. I don't got anything to trade with. It's an offering. Mm-hmm. I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. What do you want from me? What is this going to look like? And the reason those difficulties are going to go away is so that I can go out and help people. It was drilled into my head from very early on in sobriety that I needed to show up for other people. It's funny. I always think about it. I was like a couple weeks sober. I'd been in AA for 10 months drinking quite a bit. but I was like 2 weeks in, and I had just called this lady 2 weeks ago. I'd be like, I'm finally willing to go to any lengths. And we're 2 weeks in, and there's a freaking new girl that walks in the room, and she's like pushing me towards her. And I'm like, what do you want me to do with that? And she's like, maybe you can show her where the coffee is and say hi. And I'm like, okay. So anyhow, I guess the point of that, the reason I wanted to go back is it brings me back to this idea in the seventh step, that the purpose of this now is to go out and try to be useful. That's why I get those characters, you know? And yeah, that's it.
Done. Thank you. Thank you both very much. It's all the time we have tonight. We're going to pass the seventh states that every group ought to be self-serving, declining outside. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility to members, not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local area, and the general service office. This keeps AA free of outside input that might to help the alcohol. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting for all attendees, encourages and contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? The VAC is this weekend, Virginia Area Assembly. I didn't know. I see a few other people that are at district here. So that is welcome. All AA members are welcome to attend. Get your voice heard. GSRs are the only ones that can vote, but you are welcome to go up to the mic and have your bird there. It's going to be a blast. That is going to be at the Marriott in Chesapeake, right? Yes.
Delta Marriott.
Delta. That's that Delta Marriott. It is specifically the Delta Marriott in Chesapeake. Hope to see some of y'all there. Nobody has any other announcements. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Awesome. Point out that literature is available. Literature is available right there on the hand sanitizing station. It isn't actually a hand sanitizing station. That is the literature table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. If you would like to purchase a book, pamphlets are free. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting. That will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. If you hit the train tracks, you've gone too far. It's right there on the right-hand side. In closing, let's thank the panel again. Thanks to all who participated. After them, we'll have a chance.
Grant will come, but obviously clear away the wreckage of your past. Get freely of what you find. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Lead some of us to trudge the road of happiness. God bless you.
All right. Thanks. We can close it out with the Lord's Prayer. If y'all want to circle up, make a little circle. There actually is hand sanitizer. It's just not where it says it is. It's right there in that hallway.
We're gonna make a show.
Perfect oval. All right, quick moment of silence. Goodbye. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and glory.